At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste. So here's a little taste of all the delicious possibilities. Juicy, hand-picked heirloom tomatoes. Seared certified Angus steak over aged cheddar mashed potatoes. Or how about fresh dough, stretched by hand for every house-made pizza? Is your mouth watering yet? From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Got a lot going on the show today. Hour number two coming your way on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coming up during the 12 o'clock hour, Joe Dubin will help us process through this big TSSAA meeting going on right now on what to do about the fall sports, trying to maybe compress the season, back up the season to try to get the games in, the continuing challenge for everybody to either resume or just execute in some form. The season is coming up on all levels. In the meantime, the social justice, social equality, racial equality, systematic racism, all of that continues to run through, and we have discussed that on our show. And one of the big things that happened this week, a lot of you already are aware of this, of course, the state of Mississippi will be changing their flag that has the Confederate flag emblem on it. And instrumental in there were all of the coaches of the universities down in the state of Mississippi, including our friend Kermit Davis, the coach of the Ole Miss Rebel basketball team. And Coach, it's great to talk to you once again, and thanks a lot for taking the time with us today.
Well, great to be with you guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, I know you've done plenty of interviews since the news came down, but just for people that maybe haven't heard you talk about it, because you have a deep history in that state. You grew up there, and so this was an issue that you've known about for all of your life, and so how does it feel to have this historic week that has just transpired?
Well, guys, I mean, it's long, long overdue. You know, even as a young guy growing up in Mississippi, you know, and I was in, I think, in the third and fourth grade. It was about a year and a half process when schools were integrated. And you know, so grew up, obviously, in the world of athletics, as you guys did, and black teammates and great black friends growing up through high school and college. And the flag was just never a representative of the citizens in our state, and I felt badly for it. And so, but you know what? There's some things in our past in Mississippi that obviously we're not proud of, like a lot of people have in a lot of areas in our country. But it was an unbelievable day for us and for athletic administrators to be able to spend some time in the House and the Senate and voice our platform and to see a change. I mean, it was a great day for our state to move forward.
I thought that was very powerful. Some of the clips that I saw where there was a lot of solidarity. There was a lot of coming together from, you know, rival schools, right? Teams that battle against each other a lot on the playing field, on the court, speaking up about the same issue there. And I was thinking this, Coach, you know, when you sign up to be a coach, you're probably not envisioning this, that specifically, you know, talking to the state legislature about something like that. So how did you prepare yourself, and what was it like for all of the coaches maybe getting ready to make such an important presentation there?
Well, it was, and I was honored, and we've all been able to, you know, do some things on the court, whether it's big wins or championships and good teams and all that. But I promise you, for me, it was nothing that I've done in athletics more gratifying than that day. And, you know, I was born and raised in Mississippi, so, you know, I was one of two people that got a chance to speak, you know, publicly representing all the coaches. And it was cool to think that, you know, it was State Ole Miss, Southern Miss, Mississippi Valley, Alcorn State, Jackson State, Delta State, all the colleges. I think it was almost 50 representatives. But you know, I think for me, I didn't take any notes. Obviously, I had an idea what I wanted to say. But I think when you believe in something so passionately, you do. I know it sounds corny, but you do. You speak from the heart, and it was something that I felt as a Mississippian was. I was just glad to be a small part of it, and it was very well received. I've been on a lot of talk shows and national publication. But what was all the pushback? I'm just telling you guys, I mean, just me personally, I haven't seen the pushback. I mean, I think people at the end of the day, well, there's some people who wanted to keep the flag because of history. Yes, there was. But I think everybody deep down knows that's the right thing for our state to grow.
That's a really good point that I think people are maybe coming to grips with. What's really the right thing to do? I would imagine the feedback you've gotten from your players in the aftermath of this has got to be pretty gratifying as well.
It has been. And we've got a good group. We're just talking with two or three guys a while ago. They've just gotten through. You know, we're in a voluntary stage, and they'd done some lifting, and they came in the office, and we were just talking. You know, we talk about a lot of different subjects, like all the coaches have, whether it was right after the George Floyd incident in Minneapolis. And, you know, that was a lot of Zoom because they weren't on our campus yet. We had two or three conversations about the flag, the process of it. And then the day that I came back from, you know, from the Capitol and got a chance to tell our players that it went well. And then when the flag was taken down, obviously we haven't flown it since 2016. And that was the whole thing. Why would you have a state flag that people are embarrassed to fly? You know, so around the whole state, there was numerous areas nobody would fly it, including Ole Miss. So, but it was a good day. And I do think they appreciated me, you know, and the coaches representing them.
Coach Kermit Davis is with us. And Coach, as you have been recruiting, and now you envision what recruiting is going to be like going forward, is it make it a little easier sell? Have you ever dealt with that specific issue before? Or is it just more of a feeling that maybe that feeling around it will be a little different, particularly with either in-state, well, actually for in-state kids or out-of-state kids?
Yeah, and that's a great point, because that's what I said, and just when I was delivering the two remarks, this is about in-state Mississippi kids, a flag representing them. This is about out-of-state kids representing them. This is about black students coming to Ole Miss. But you know what? This is about white students coming to Ole Miss also. Is that what has been more impressive to me than anything, guys, is in the marches and the rallies is young white America with young black America. I don't think we've ever seen it so united. And so it was on all fronts. And, yeah, have we dealt with it in recruiting? We sure have. You know, we're up front with a lot of different things. And what I tell them is this, is I've got three full-time black assistants on my staff. And I said, talk to those guys and talk to their wives and talk about all their children that are in the school systems. And you know what? The biggest thing is talk to our players, whether we have a guy from L.A., from New Jersey, Chicago, the Bahamas, Georgia, Atlanta, everywhere, all over the country. And ask them about their experience. And I'm just telling you, the people at Ole Miss and in Oxford in our area are the most welcoming people I've ever coached with, and they treat our players with such dignity and class. And is there racism all over? Sure. There's pockets of it everywhere in our country. But so I really think when they get on campus, they get a chance to visit with everybody, and I think they can really feel the family atmosphere here.
We're talking to Ole Miss basketball coach Kermit Davis, one of our favorites here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. And I have a lot of family in Mississippi, so I spent a lot of time there growing up and, you know, saw some things that I wasn't used to, being around just because of what you've been talking about, of the change that needed to happen. And so to hear your words and the things that you've been doing there at Ole Miss as a native of Mississippi, I want to say thank you on behalf of my family that the changes, we're seeing the change. There's still a long way to go, but I'm glad that you're a part of it because you're one of the good ones.
Well, I appreciate that. And like I said, I've heard this statement, Tom Izzo said, and other people have said it, you know, we can't have a moment. It's got to be a movement. So that was a good first step. Now what are we going to do to really improve Mississippians' lives, you know, from job opportunities, educational opportunities, improving opportunities for the black male and females in our state, you know, of entering job markets. We do think that with the flag going down, that, you know what, there's going to be a lot more job possibilities. So you're right. It was a great start, but we've got a lot of work ahead of us, not only in Mississippi, but across the country.
So one thing that we've seen, Kermit, over the, you know, through a lot of this is we've seen the student athlete speak out and have their voice be heard. And in some cases, and, you know, you've seen it at other schools that maybe the coach is in the wrong and the player says something about that. I look at it as I think this is good to have players and coaches work together on these issues to both have both sides heard. But, you know, what have you seen with some of the other things that are going on, and how do you feel about that, about the player having more of a voice?
You know, in all the incidents that we've looked at, you know, and there's been pockets of them at, you know, Iowa and Florida State, Oklahoma State, I'm sure others that I haven't mentioned, the one thing that is great is that you see young people that they're informative, they're intelligent, and they voice their opinion. But what you see as coaches is I think it all gets us to be much better listeners. And we do listen, and you've seen it's common ground. They've got the common ground, it seems like, at the places that are there. And so those are things that I think is healthy, you know, that the players can speak up. And then coaches or administrators, we listen. And so I just think it's healthy, and it's been a long time coming. And but you know what? Because of all the social media and everything, young people are just so much more informed than I was back in the late 70s and early 80s, just because of the information that's right there in front of them.
Something we've been talking about today, Kermit, is and it's more related to fall sports in high school, but obviously this is affecting professional sports, collegiate sports, high school sports. But from your point of view, if high school football, for instance, gets delayed, that obviously affects basketball, which will affect recruiting and what as you try and bring players in. And in high school sports, I mean, you don't get that back. That's just, there's something special about high school sports, whether it's football or basketball or baseball or any sport that you play. So how do you view things going on and decisions being made with high school sports?
I was talking to a mom last night, and her son is a 2020 that we're recruiting, and you know, their AAU season got cut short. They could compete for a state championship. Obviously, you just hate it for this past class that they didn't get to go through the prom and the graduation, all the fun things, guys, that we all, it was one of the funnest things that we can remember in our lifetime. And then they couldn't go through the summer basketball. And then she said, you know, coach, we're just kind of have gotten to the fact that we're not going to be able to take official visits in the fall. I said, well, that's not for sure, but you know, there's a possibility of trying to make a decision, you know, without taking a visit. So I saw that in the state of Tennessee where they did that with football. And I just think that, you know, I get it and I understand it. Safety's the biggest issue. I know one thing, our leadership and our conference with Commissioner Sankey and his staff, the leadership on our campus, Dr. Boyce and Keith Carter, AD, there's some smart people that are going to make intelligent decisions. Are they trying to be aggressive and play? They sure are, but safety's at the very forefront. And we talk about here a bunch, guys, we got to go slow early. Hopefully we can play fast late, but we got to go through right protocol. So the biggest thing I can tell you guys that we have to be is, as we all know, in your business of mine, as we all know, is flexibility. You just got to be flexible. We just got to stay flexible and do what's right and what's safe for our athletes.
Boy, you said it well. Coach Kermit Davis with us. Coach, great to catch up with you. It was always it was great to watch you in action down there. That was a big moment that certainly I know Mississippians will always remember. But, you know, I think when we look back on this years from now, we'll talk about some of these things that happened during this time. This is history is being written as we speak from all these different fronts. So congratulations on you and all the coaches down there that came together to help make this happen.
Well, thanks, man. Always love your show. And stay safe. Look forward to seeing you soon, hopefully.
All right.
Thanks,
sounds
coach.
Good.
All right.
Coach Kermit
thanks,
Davis, longtime coach at Middle Tennessee, of course, head coach now for Ole Miss on the men's basketball side. And, you know, we haven't really talked too much about the college basketball season, but obviously there there will be issues there. As he said, you just have to take it, be flexible, take it one day at a time, do everything that you can in your control to see to it that the season can be played. Lots of things going on right now. When we come back, we'll spell it out. We'll let you know some of the other things going on in terms of what's happening locally in Nashville. Mayor Cooper has given out the numbers on the daily cases. We'll tell you about that when we come back as well. Stay tuned. This is 102.5 The Game, ESPN Radio Nashville. Hanging out here on this rainy Wednesday. A lot of rain in the forecast today, on and off. So make sure you stay safe. In the meantime, Mayor Cooper has put out the daily report, as he does pretty much every day. There was a day that didn't have the data. They had a breakdown in the system. So if you look at the last couple of days in particular, I try to follow it every day. And I know some of it is related to how many people get tested, Chase. But, when you really look closely, we are struggling. 343 cases in the past 24 hours. So the number of cases have been going up, no question about it, in the last couple of weeks. So that's in Davidson County. So we got to buckle down. We got to bear down here. It's very, very important. And I'll admit, I think all of us, and myself included, maybe we got into a little bit of cruise control there when we opened up. We got from phase one to phase two and then on to phase three. You start just mentally, maybe even subconsciously thinking, hey, the worst is over. But I tried to remind myself, and I said it on the show a few times, like the more you open up, the more careful you have to be, right? When you're not allowed to go anywhere and things aren't open, you probably don't have to be as careful. You're not around as many people. But now that there are more people out and about, you got to be more careful. And obviously, there are a lot of people that are not being careful. So we have to make sure we do this. I mean, it's just a fact, right? And those that put up a squawk about it, we got to speak out against that, right? Because we're talking about all these things that we want to see. We want to see football. We want to see fall sports. We want to see high school sports. All of these things. But we're not going to be able to do it unless we take the measures necessary. And we sure as heck don't want to go backwards and have to go back to phase two or phase one. But it's in the cards, right? It's possible that we would have to do that if we don't really all pay attention to our habits.
I feel like that, and we've all been in this situation in our lives before, but we're seriously about to be, I will turn this car around and go right back to phase two if you don't behave. I mean, that's really where we're at. And, I said it earlier, I went and met a friend yesterday. I wore my mask. She wore her mask going into the place. And just that's what we have to do. And I know that there are a lot of people that want to complain about it, and that's whatever. But then just do it. Do what we need to do. Because the last thing I want to see is the country or the town shut down again, because then we're going to have even bigger problems. I mean, we financially, things are already a mess because of this. You don't want to have to go through it again. And I have a lot of friends that work in the service industry. Obviously, our lives have been affected without sports. I mean, we're that close to having sports come back, but if the trends continue, then that may not happen. So we need to do our part to shut this down. I know a lot of us thought, okay, get to the warm months, it's going to go away. Well, it hasn't. And so now you have to adapt and have to do what's right to try and to curb this thing. And I hope that everybody bands together and does it. I've seen a lot of, I posted that picture of me outside of First Horizon Park. Guess what I had on? I had on a mask. So just wear the mask. There's a lot of fashionable ones.
And you know, and I think it's important to do a little bit of homework on where it's okay to not wear the mask, but where you really need to wear the mask, right? If you're, for example, if you're riding a bike and you're zooming around or on a hike, obviously you don't have to wear the mask there. But if you're near a lot of people, right, if you're going, even if you're outside, if you're in a crowd of people, you need to wear the mask. And obviously, if you're inside, around anybody, where the air is circulating more, that's where it's essential to wear the mask. If you're getting on an elevator, please, you know, wear the mask. That's important, right? I had a friend of mine tell me they actually asked somebody who was about to get on a crowded elevator that didn't have a mask on, can you take the next one? And, you know, imagine doing that, right? That's not easy to throw out there. And he got a dirty look. You know, that was not received very well by that person. But I can see it. You know, why? You know, we have to make it a habit. There's only one way to make people change their habits sometimes, and that is sometimes you got to get hit between the eyes with a little verbal shock. You know, that I hope that person went home that day and said, you know what, I probably just need to wear the mask.
Well,
you know,
and
let's hope that that was the outcome, right? It's not trying to shame people or anything. It's just we got to snap people into shape here if we're gonna change the numbers.
And the problem is
the trend is not going in the right direction here.
Right. And the problem is we live in so much of a me society. If you truly believe that you don't need to wear it, and that's just the decision you've made, and you're going to die on that vine, okay, I guess I can't change your mind. But respect my wishes, okay? Respect that you're not the only person living in this world. And if you're, you know, I told the story of the person when I was at Target that was like, I'm not going to live in fear and right up in my bubble. Okay, fine. Don't live in fear. Do you. But stay out of my space, because I am concerned about this, and I am concerned about my loved ones getting this. You know, I have two parents that are older now that I want to pay attention to and make sure that they're safe. You know, I have other family members that I want to make sure that they're safe. So, you know, I have a friend that has a young daughter. So it's like you have to think more than about yourself. And that's what people just need to do at this point, and not make it all about you.
Right. But even it's whatever motivation makes it happen, right? There's different, we always talk about coaches who might use different ways to motivate different players. If you want to make it about you or whatever, do it for, if you're listening to a sports talk show, you probably want to see some games. Right? Motivate yourself that way. If I wear this mask, it's going to help me be able to see the games. Right? If that's what motivates you to do it, then that's fine. Right? Even if it's like, well, if I get it, I'll be all right. I'm healthy. I'm not worried about it. You know, if you think that way, then that's one thing. But there's so many layers to it. But whatever flips that switch in your mind, you know, you're free to motivate yourself however it happens. And maybe you need somebody else to motivate you, right? And then, of course, the next level is we're making rules, right? This is what we did in Davidson County over the weekend. We're making rules that you have to wear the mask, and there could be consequences if you don't. But it's going to be hard to enforce. We know that. I mean, the real way that this has got to happen is it's got to happen because we want it to happen, and we need it to happen.
Yeah.
It's a simple thing.
We're in the second half now. We are in
the second half. 2020. Come on, we got to be a second half team. I saw the tweet from Steve Levy from ESPN. He says we got to be a second half team in 2020.
Yeah,
Marquise, as a collective.
Marquise had a good one too. He tweeted out this morning and said, "Second half, let's put Tua in." that's where we're at. But it's let's rally in the second half. Let's make the second half much better than the first half. And win this game. But we got to rally together to do it.
Yep, we got to do it together. All right, when we come back, our motivational speech is done for the day, at least for the hour. We'll turn the page and come back with more here in just a moment here on 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe here with you. Darren McFarland is on vacation this week.
This is my favorite Tom Petty song, Willie.
Yeah?
Learning All to right. Fly.
I like this one. This is an excellent album. This is 90s Tom Petty, as opposed to late 70s, early 80s Tom Petty, where he's probably most known for. But that is good Tom Petty right there, no question.
He would always play. Well, I saw him 3 times in concert before he passed, and he would play this acoustically, and it was awesome because everybody would sing it with him in the arena, and it was just such a cool. You'd have lighters because people, young people, you don't know this, but actually used to hold up lighters at concerts and not your cell phone. This was definitely a lighter song.
I got something for you from the baseball world.
Hit us, Willie.
Was very, very interesting. And I don't know that it has any chance of happening, but it's something that I really had never thought about before, but I think would solve some of the issues in baseball. As a lot of you know, if you're a baseball fan, you may have seen the last of the pitcher hitting, right, forever. They have decided for this year, for sure, to use the DH in both leagues, the universal DH, if you will. So that might start us on a path where it never goes back. First of all, are you guys with that? Are you guys total DH all the time people? Or do you like the variety between the two leagues in some form?
So there are two answers to that for me. I like how it is. I'm a National League guy. I like that there is a different strategy in the National League than there is in the American League because you don't have the DH. I do like that. With all of that said, I'm not going to lose any sleep over if they go DH. I would understand having one rule across the board because gone are the days of one league feeling like two. I think that they have, you know, one thing that I learned while watching some of these old games, even as late as the 90s, that you still kind of had that difference between the National League and the American League, that even though they were under the Major League Baseball banner, that they still kind of operated as two different entities. But those days are gone. I would understand if they just went to one rule to simplify it. It would change the game. I mean, it would definitely add a different element to having that in the National League. I mean, you would have free agency plans change because you would be trying to find that guy that can be the DH like in the American League. So it would definitely change it, but I'd be fine. If they kept it, then that's whatever.
Okay. So you have not been driving the, hey, we need to get rid of the, you know, we need to have the DH in both leagues. You haven't been on that train for years. Basically you were okay with the variety between the leagues, even though, as you mentioned, it got clouded when they went to interleague play in 1997. This is where it all started spinning because now you don't even have a separate office for the AL and the NL like you used to. So everything is sort of blended together. You don't have umpires that work in only the AL or the NL. Everything is mixed together anyway. So that's led us to this point. So if you were going to keep it completely separate and go DH in one league and no DH in the other, you'd almost have to get rid of interleague play to do it in a most pure form. So it makes sense that it's evolved to this where you're going to have it the same in both leagues.
Yeah, right.
But the concept of the pitcher hitting, you're not one of these people that say, I just don't want to watch the pitcher hit. You're not that hardcore about it.
No, because really, okay. And I know Darren has brought this up a lot over the years. I can remember even before being a part of this station, I would listen to you two argue over this. But he's an American League guy, so he's used to the DH. I understand that in most cases, when the pitcher goes up to the plate, it's a wasted at bat. I understand that. But there is an art to bunting. There is a purpose for bunting. There is a purpose to the pinch hitter in that when you get into the later innings. But the rules have changed with pitchers too. So, you know, you have to face, like you were saying, you have to face three batters. So you don't have that, okay, you pinch hit for a pitcher, you send in one guy, he gets one batter, and then he's out. That changes the strategy too.
Which I don't like.
I don't
like that we've had to get to that point. You have to face the three batters. I'm not into that.
I don't love that either because you have specialists. You have guys that they are left-handed specialists or whatever.
One of the things I love about the game is thinking along with the situation, right? And thinking, you know, what is this team thinking? What's this manager thinking? You know, is he going to pinch hit here? And who would he pinch hit? And who does he have to put in the game? All of these things, to me, are compelling about watching a game that doesn't have a DH. And I'm not really against the DH. And again, I've enjoyed over the years the variety, you know, watching some game, you know, the contrast between the styles. That's one of the things that makes it cool. But so I'm working towards the proposal that I heard yesterday on Jason Stark's podcast. So Marquise, how do you feel about it? You're a National League guy. You're a Dodger fan.
Would you
be sad to see the DH come into the National League permanently?
Would I be sad to see Kershaw never hit again? I mean, no, not really. I'm fine with that. I'm okay with it. I just want baseball. I don't really care about the rule. I just want baseball. I don't really care about the DH. I never really been like opposed or, you know, it never really bothered me any at all.
So you don't have a strong.
Yeah, I don't. Other. Like, you know, I don't. Like, I don't like seeing Kershaw hit at all because it's just awful. Because every time he goes up there, he tries to bunt. He's a horrible bunter. But other than that, like, I have no strong feelings about the DH or not. But this is just me. There's rules in every league that I would love to change, and I just don't think that's the one that's the hill that I'm going to die on with baseball.
Okay. Now, how do you guys feel about two other issues in the game, to me, that are big issues? A, the pace of the game. Do we agree that the pace of the game is an issue?
Yes.
It's a no-brainer, right?
I mean, yeah.
We want to see the game move faster, right?
Yeah, it does drag.
Adding the DH is not going to speed up the game, right? And that is that is one purpose of the pitcher going up there and hitting. And let's be honest, there are a lot of weak hitting players who are defensive players, a catcher, a shortstop sometimes, who are hitting eighth in front of the pitcher. And that does generally lend itself to keeping the game moving a little bit faster, right? Because those guys are going to be easier outs. They're not going to work the count to 3-2. They're not going to foul off five pitches. You know, they're less likely to get on base and prolong the game. So that's a reason maybe to consider not putting the DH into the National League permanently. Now, what about the overall level of action in a game? Don't you think it's a big thing? I feel like this may be the biggest thing. A game seems like it's moving faster if there's more action, right? Guys running from first to third on a base hit, maybe a hit-and-run play, a bunt play. But the analytics have taken that out. The shifts and things like that, there's less action on the bases, and there's more strikeouts, there's more walks, there's more home runs, right? That's an issue. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that it is, but so the as I sit here and we're having this conversation, I'm trying to think of the best analogy, because the problem with baseball has been, and we're all guilty of it, of, well, it's always been this way. We've done it this way. This is how the game was created way back when. So we don't need to change it. Well, now we've gotten to a point where they're seeing the effects of not changing, that attendance is down, that the games are too long, that the next generation of fan the attention span isn't there. So you have to do things. And it's almost like now they're trying to take a game of chess and turn it into a game of checkers. So keep it similar, but make it a little, I guess a little, they're simplifying it, so to speak, is kind of the way that I look at it. But you're not going to make it perfect. Like you said, you're not, with all these changes that they're making, you're not going to completely solve the pace of play. There's always going to.
But you can combat it with pitch clock and things like that, I think.
And they have.
I would like to see them go to the next step of the pitch clock. I think that would have been important, because the reality is, with the way the game has gone, pitchers are throwing harder. Batters are more evolved than they were, say, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. They know how to foul off pitches more. Yes, they strike out more, but they work the count more. It's harder to get people out, I think, than it was. You know, it's just, you have to work harder for each out, and that prolongs the game. So you don't need, on top of that, a pitcher or a batter that's wasting precious seconds that prolongs the game. I think that's where you have to try to make it up. So with that, now let me get to my proposal, because this is where I think we can hit on some of all of these things that we're talking about and improve.
See what you did there.
Yeah. Okay. So what if you could DH for your starting pitcher, But once the starting pitcher is out, then the DH is gone with him. In other words, you know, the Braves can DH. Let's say somebody else is playing first base, and Freddie Freeman has the day off, but he can be the DH. Mike Soroka is pitching for the Braves. Well, when Mike Soroka's turn comes to bat, Freddie Freeman is hitting there. He's the DH. But when Soroka is taken out of the game, then you lose the DH. Freddie Freeman's out of the game.
So he doesn't go to first.
Either the pitcher has to hit. He can't go into the game. He's out. So then when the pitcher spot comes out after that, either the pitcher has to hit, which rarely happens. Relief pitchers don't hit very often. But then you get that game of, I gotta use my bench. I've got to pinch hit. Who do I pinch hit here for? You know, now I do my pitching changes. On the surface, do you like that?
So let me.
It's more of a compromise, right? It does two things. It keeps the DH involved to a degree, but later in the game, you have this chess match that we're talking about. You have the thinking game of baseball, which is a huge element of it that's still preserved. And lastly, it keeps the starting pitcher as a very, very important, prominent role. It would eliminate all of this stuff that we're seeing now about teams using the, quote, starter, right? Like the Rays started doing a lot. You start the guy, pitch him for an inning, and then you put other guys in, which has a lot more pitching changes and a lot more no-names going. I love the element of it's Greg Maddux on one side, it's Randy Johnson on the other side. Boy, we got a great pitcher's duel. You know, we're seeing less of that. The starting pitcher is being eroded because it's harder and harder to go six, right, seven, eight innings. This would place an extra value on guys who could get you into the seventh and eighth inning because it would keep your DH in the game.
So how I understand your proposal, you're basically saying that you're going to have a DH throughout the game, but you have a starting DH, and then you have pinch hitters or relief DHs that go along with the relief pitcher. So are you saying that every time you make a pitching change, you lose that DH?
No, I'm saying that you get one DH for the starting pitcher. If the starting pitcher gets knocked out in the first inning, the DH is gone. And so
you would then have to pinch hit for the pitcher spot like you do now.
Yeah, exactly. The DH is gone. The pitcher spot comes up, the pitcher hits, or you put up a pinch hitter.
Yeah. I see where you're at. I hear where you're coming from. I don't see that ever. I don't see them doing that. I like it because you're getting the best of both worlds, and that's what you're trying to accomplish here. But you're going to have the pushback you're going to get is, okay, well, if I lose the DH in the first inning because my pitcher just has a gas can on the mound and I have to pull the pitcher, then that changes everything for the – I mean,
of course,
you're going to go through the bench.
Yeah, so you better have good starting pitches.
Yeah, right. But we know that that's – especially when you go back to 162, we know that every pitcher is good for one clunker or more a season.
Sure, and that's the one game that you'd have to maneuver. But remember, in the National League right now, he's got a hit for himself anyway. So
right.
So the American League would probably make the biggest adjustment. They'd have to really make
the American League doesn't
probably
go
some
for
roster
it.
Moves accordingly to have a little deeper bench, some guys you can go to. If I'm a bench player, I would love this, right? Because
sure.
In the American League, because it would maybe get me into more games than I ordinarily would be in.
But you would have people.
Versatility would be important. Athleticism is important. It's not just, you know, sluggers who are up there hitting home runs.
Right. You would have people, though, that are longtime American leaguers going, we've had this figured out for years. Why are you punishing us because the
right.
National League didn't want to get on board? I mean, you would. You would have a lot of those people. And if Darren were here, I have a feeling that's what he'd be saying right now. Like, why are you going to punish? And I'm playing both sides. I'm trying to just be the man in the middle and look at both sides, that the American League could look at it as, why are you going to punish us because the National League wants to hold on to some semblance of how it used to be? That's going to be the biggest argument. I'm not saying that it's necessarily wrong or a bad idea. I'm just, that's some of the pushback that I think you would get with it.
Yeah, I'm not as much looking at what the pushback would be as opposed to just the concept. I had never thought about this before, the other day. But I just think it's a really interesting compromise that would preserve maybe the best in a lot of cases of both things. You have the element of the DH, and it rewards you for having a good starting pitcher. A good starting pitcher means your DH will get up to the plate more, because that is definitely happening in baseball. The starting pitcher is becoming less of a big role. Starting pitchers on the average now, if you get 6 innings out of your starting pitcher, it's like the guy gets a huge congratulations. Ooh, he went 6 innings. Where, years ago, that would have been like, he only went 6? Come on, you got to give me 7. You got to give me 8. And then a generation before that, it was very commonplace for you to complete 2/3 of your starts, right? And a lot of times in a 4-man rotation, you start 40 games and you complete 25 of them, those days are gone. Those days are not happening. But if we can have a little incentive for teams to get starters to go a little deeper in the games, because you get that hitter in there more, and then you can mix and match and do all the chess match. So you preserve the chess match.
Yeah.
You emphasize the starting pitcher. Just more action, more things going on in the game. And maybe it makes the game go faster.
I do like that thought process of keeping the chess match, because that is the thing I love about the National League, that it's maybe that's the analogy, that the National League is chess and the American League is checkers, because there's definitely a strategy that makes you think as a manager when you play National League ball, because you don't just have to rely on the DH. You do have to decide how to use your bench and your bullpen and move pieces around. You know, one of my favorites, and I think Bobby Cox did this some, but La Russa did this a lot with the Cardinals, batting the pitcher in the 8th spot, because you try and put a speed guy on in the 9th spot to basically act as a leadoff hitter. I mean, that type of strategy. I used to love that stuff of how you would try and work your lineup, and then once you got later in the game, okay, how do you work the substitutions to work with your lineup? So I do like that part of your proposal of trying to preserve some of that.
All right. I think we got Tracy on the line that wants to weigh in on this. Tracy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Willie, man, I just turned on the radio and heard your proposal. Was that your idea? Because it is absolutely brilliant. I think it's so good. It's better than the American or the National League version. I think it would really heighten the interest in the game. I think it's a great proposal.
Well, I wish I had come up with it, but Jason Stark, who does a podcast called Starkville, which I would highly recommend if you're a hardcore baseball fan. It was a really cool discussion they had with the Cubs announcers about what to do about this, because, that what they are going to do is have both leagues have the DH. I don't know where Jason came up with it. I don't know if he came up with it or he'd get that passed along. I'm not even sure if it's been a legit proposal. Because they can't get to these things because they have so much animosity right now between the players and the owners. But I would love to have a deep discussion on that because I think it'd be worthy of throwing it out there.
Well, I'd love to ask a player, what they would think. Somebody like Kurt Casale's played in both leagues that we had on. He might have a good insight on that because he's seen both sides of it. But I think that the more I think about it now, it's like, I'm intrigued by it. But best of both worlds scenarios are always hard because you have to get both sides to agree. And as you just brought up, we know how difficult that has been lately in baseball of getting both sides to agree. So while on paper it sounds and feels great, I don't know if it would happen.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we will wrap up this hour. Coming up during the noon hour, Joe Dubin will join us, and we'll talk about the TSSAA meetings going on today to try to figure out how to maneuver through the fall sports. We'll go back through it, tell you what's been proposed, and what each sport is dealing with in terms of the fall sports, on when practice can start, when games potentially could start, and how you'd have to adjust the schedule for all of them. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Ah, yes. Marquise has another famous song that he has played that we have allowed to play a little bit. Coming up, Joe Dubin on the other side in the noon hour, and we will talk about the TSSAA, all that's going on there. Let's quickly update you, too, on the speculation this morning, and I have not seen any follow-up to this, Chase, that because I know the NHL fans are clamoring, you know, really hoping, waiting for the next chapter in the process here, but still no official word on the new cities, but the latest rumor is it will be two Canadian cities. It will be Edmonton and Toronto,
yep,
and not Las Vegas after all of this.
Yeah, which, I mean, I know that the numbers and everything were going up in Nevada and Las Vegas, but I am surprised by that because as of yesterday we were talking about, yeah, it's Vegas and figuring out the other city. I mean, everybody was pretty much just riding Vegas down that they were going to be one of the hub cities. But as we have learned with all of this, things can change. And things continue to change as we learn more information. So you should never just say, hey, yeah, this is actually what it's going to be and everything's set in stone. Like I said earlier, Willie, I'm not going to believe that it's Edmonton and Toronto until Gary Bettman goes on a Zoom call or whatever and says, hey, it's Edmonton and Toronto. At that point, I'm just going to sit back and wait and see what happens with any type of announcement.
I'll read you what's on the Sportsnet website right now. And that's where Elliot Friedman works. And, of course, Elliot's on vacation this week and next week, so we will not be hearing from him. We'll be talking to some other hockey people as we continue to follow the story. But and Chris Mason today will join us at 1. We'll get his thoughts on it. But Toronto, this is from the Sportsnet desk. Toronto and Edmonton are expected to be announced as NHL hub cities. The NHL's return to play plan would see the 12 teams from each conference go to the two hubs to resume play in the special format. These are all things that we know, the 5 through 12 and all that stuff. According to Elliot Friedman, it's likely that the Western Conference will play in the Western-based hub and the Eastern Conference will play in the Eastern-based hub, which would mean that Nashville would go to Edmonton and not to Toronto. But it keeps going back and forth, right? You keep hearing different things about what the philosophy is there. But so essentially, Edmonton and Toronto would be in their hometowns, although right, everybody would be in the bubble anyway. It's not like those guys would gain an advantage by being able to go home.
Right.
They've got to stay on the campus.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And there was a question for a while, like if, you know, at one time we were talking about Minnesota, could Minneapolis be one, or St. Paul, would they get to go home? And they've ruled no. When you got to be in the bubble. You got to be with everybody. And I think that's smart. That's the fairest way to possibly do it. But Elliot did say, you know, I listened to Elliot last week with you guys, and he said that he felt like the East would play in the East, the West would play in the West. I know it's changed over and over again, but that seems like the most logical thing to do. Just keep it that way so the Preds head to Edmonton if that is in case or in fact one of the cities. So I don't have a problem with that. I'm ready for a plan. I'm ready for phase three, you know, July 10th, almost there. Let's just get to that point and get this thing going.
So it looks like going north of the border. But if this gives you a better chance of creating an environment that you could execute the season, I'm all for it. Because as we're learning today, you know, right now we're seeing real pushback. This is officially now moving back the high school calendar in our state, right? That's a real thing. I do not doubt that college football is going to have to make some adjustments here. The more days go by, the more you wonder, can they pull this off, you know, without adjusting the schedule or shortening the schedule in some form before it's all over. That remains to be seen. Maybe we'll kick it around in the next hour. One more hockey note before we close out this hour. Jace, today would be the free agency.
Starting.
I mean, think about July 1st we've had before.
Like Mikhail Granlund and Craig Smith, for instance, do they just extend their contracts by a few months? Does whatever gain, like, do they take the time that's missed and apply that to extend it out, or how does that work? Because I know they haven't.
Yeah, they've had
paid for
they've
this,
had but... to really make all, they've had to adjust things, you know, with visas and they've basically paused it. Right, it's frozen until further notice. But that is something that does have to be worked out. In fact, there's reports today that even stuff like in the CBA extension, trying to get all of this stuff mapped out while you're at it, you know, players going back to the Olympics in the next go. Remember, they didn't go the last time. They want to play. So that's another thing that they would like to get back on the agenda, as well as trying to address what do you do about this year's free agents. So they're looking short-term and long-term as they try to hash all of this out and get everything finalized for training camp to start on July 10th.
Right. So it's just it's kind of confusing. But it is
It's very confusing. But
it's the world
is,
in which we
it's,
live.
It's common sense, too. But it's common sense, right?
Sure.
It's not like in the as you get back to training camp part two, the summer, you know, the reshuffling, getting ready for the resumption of the season, that you'd lose your free agents, so you couldn't do it. But it's just interesting of where the clock would be. Today we would be talking about whether Granlund, Smith, all the others would be coming back. Where would they be going? You know, Chase, you and I did a heck of a show last July 1st. Remember the whole Matt Duchene thing? You know, waiting and waiting and waiting. It seemed like forever. What, it was a couple of days before it actually got confirmed, even though it was highly regarded as something that was going to happen, right? It looked for sure like that it was going to be Duchene to the Predators. Eventually it was. But Artemi Panarin signing with the Rangers, remember, it was a pretty eventful July 1st last year.
Yep.
Yeah, this was supposed to be NBA free agency, too. Supposed to start today.
Oh, man, and you know how that goes, too, well, Marquise. That's always full of some fun.
Yeah, the biggest free agent, though, is Anthony Davis, which, I mean, we kind of already know that he's probably going to re-sign with the Lakers. But, you know, there's some other ones. Draymond Green, he re-signed, so he's good. And, this free agency was going to be a little dry anyway, so it's kind of good. Next year will probably be a little bit better, though.
Mm-hmm. All right. We've reached the halfway point of the show. We'll take a short break, come back, and we'll have a fun topic for you in honor of Bobby Bonilla. Yes, it's Bobby Bonilla Day, I know. believe me, I'm well aware as a Mets fan that it's Bobby Bonilla Day. You don't have to remind me. But it kind of brings up a topic that Chase came up with here. We'll have some fun with that on the other side. Marquise, yes, assisting on that as well. All right, we'll come back with more. The second half of the show coming your way on Darren Donick and Chase.
This is Troy Millings from Earn Your Leisure. On Earn Your Leisure, we're all about smart money moves, and here's one most people skip. Car insurance renews on autopilot, the rates creep up, and nobody tells you. That's what Insurify fixes. In about 2 minutes, completely free, you can see rates from more than 120 top insurance companies. And if there's nothing better today, they keep watching and notify you when there's a better rate. So go to Insurify.com. That's Insurify.com. Insurify.com.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.